some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's January 4th, 2011. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. My co-host tonight, Ray Dieter, and we have a very special theme. It's New Beer's Resolutions, or the return of Dave Broderick, soon to be Vermont governor. Now, what kind of show is that going to be, Ray?
I think it's going to be a great show. Hey, Jimmy, how was your New Year's, man? What'd you do?
I had a great time. Jimmy's Number 43 was rocking. Went up to New England. I'm from New Hampshire, Massachusetts border area.
Right.
And there's a local brewery there called Haverhill Brewery, the first time I ever went there.
Nice.
And our friend Dan Paquette, who is pretty things himself, used to brew there. That was the first place he brewed in the States.
Uh-huh. Don't they have a beer like Leather Lips or something like that?
They've got a lot of weird names. It's an old shoe factory town, so they have all their handles, you know, the they call them the lastings. It's what they used to put, something with shoe manufacturing.
Shoes, yeah.
So this is the shoe, you know, echo.
Wow.
You know, it's an old, you know, Massachusetts town where everybody can drink.
They put the soul into beer.
That's right, man. All right. And Ray, how are you? How was your weekend?
You know, my New Year's was fine. I made a few bad choices, but you're supposed to. That's just what it is. New Year's is about making bad decisions. And I did that. But it all in all, okay, I lived through it.
Well, we're lucky that we have some great sponsors. We've got greatbrewers.com. It's where the beer industry meets the larger beer community. Check out the updates for Beer Cloud, a mobile app to help you locate your favorite beers and store tasting notes. Greatbrewers.com. We're also supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal. GoodBeerSeal.com, an association of 27 New York City bars. Let's cut through all that because we've got a really special guest tonight. We've got Dan McLaughlin, owner of the Pony Bar.
Hey, Jimmy, how you doing?
Good, Dan.
Ray, good to be here.
Good to see you, Dan.
You were one of the cooler guys in the whole beer world.
That's not true. Not at all.
Well, not cool in the sense of cool, but in terms of a guy who worked his way up, and you've worked in breweries
the
like...
The coolest guy from upstate New York.
Oh,
anyway.
Yes.
Okay, maybe that. Maybe that. It's a very small group. It is. I think it's two of us.
But where did you first work? Where was your first job?
Empire Brewing Company, 1994. Opened a 7-barrel brewery in Syracuse. I was there for about 2.5 years. And then my employers opened a 15-barrel brewery in Rochester, and I went there. I was never a brewer, but I was always a bar manager or head bartender. And long story, very short, I met a girl, moved to New York City, and it turned out great for both of us. And
lost the girl.
Yeah, exactly. Immediately. And after being here about a year, I went to work for the gentleman to my left, Dave Broderick. I worked at the Blind Tiger for a while. Great experience. And from there, I went to Puck Fair for about 6 years. And then about 4.5 years ago, my partner Pat Hughes and I opened our first bar called Lansdowne Road, which is a big sports bar in Hell's Kitchen. But about 2 years ago, we opened the Pony Bar, which is on 45th and 10th. And that's an all-American craft beer bar. And that's really where my heart and soul is. And things have been going very well for us.
Hey, Dan, what made you decide to do all-American beer?
You know, it really started with my experience at the Empire Brewing Company. At Empire, it was sort of similar to Heartland Brewing Company in the sense that we only sold beer that we made. We had full liquor and wine by the glass and bottle. But really, it was about the beer we made there. We didn't sell anybody else's beer. And I thought it was great. I think I used to think for a long time, especially when I worked at the Blind Tiger, I used to think that American beer was really overlooked. Then I went to work at Puck Fair, we had really no American beers.
Right, right.
I think we had Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, and that was really it. And I just felt there were some great breweries out there that weren't getting their due, and when we had the opportunity to do the Pony, the idea behind it was I did not want to get into an arms race and try to be everything to everyone mm-hmm. with 300 different bottles and 80 draft lines.
It gets unwieldy. I mean, the inventory becomes really like its own entity.
It does, and I believe that, you know, craft beer is really draft beer, and that it needs to be sold, and for the most part, sold quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I worked at Puck, and we were an exceptionally busy bar for years, and we would sit on bottles that never sold.
Right.
You know, so, and I didn't want to get into that. I didn't want to, that's never really a brewer's intention.
Of course. How many draft lines do you have of the pony?
The pony, we have 20 draft lines, and we have two cask ales, so 22 altogether.
And that's all American?
Yeah, all American.
Even the casks are always American?
Yeah, casks are always American.
And what about bottles? How many bottles do you carry?
Just two. We sell bottled beer.
Two bottles?
Two bottles, correct, yeah. Bud and Bud Light. And we have them for the same reason we have liquor and for the same reason we have wine.
Can we bleep that out?
We have them just to, you know, by having them, it allows us to sell that much more draft beer, that much more craft beer. Mm-hmm. I thought early on that if we didn't have something for the naysayers or something for the non-believers, that we wouldn't get them.
Well, I got to say, Dan, I mean, you gave me a tour of your basement and stuff about a year ago, I guess.
Yep.
And I was so impressed by the organization and how you got it set up there. It's great. I was very impressed.
Can you stand up in that basement yet?
No, you cannot.
No, that's not an option, really.
I can't stand up. I'm only 6 foot.
I definitely can't stand up.
No. Standing up is not an option.
Being organized is key. I learned when I got into business with Pat Hughes, you know, get organized or get back on the road, you know, because it's all about organization with him.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a squeaky clean machine.
Thanks. Well, Dan, one of the coolest things that you do is it's your pricing. Tell us about your pricing.
Yeah, the pony, all our beers are the same price.
I think that by now most people have heard of this, but you may not have.
Yeah, maybe not, but all our beers are the same price. They're all $5.
That's for a 16-ounce pint?
No, it's for a 14-ounce beer.
A cheater pint.
Yeah, it is a cheater pint, but
we don't tell anybody that.
No, we really do. We try to promote it as much as we can.
Just for the folks out there that might not know what a cheater pint is, it looks just like a 16-ounce pint glass, but you can always tell the difference because the bottom of it is about three times as thick, so it holds 2 ounces less.
And it's much, much heavier to the
much
feel.
Heavier. Yeah.
You know, if you're in the business, you know right away.
Yeah.
We promote it as a 14-ounce pour. We never say pint. And then our other beers are 8 ounces. Any keg we buy in a sixtel, regardless of ABV, is automatically an 8-ounce pour.
Yeah.
So we get the margin back on it. Mm-hmm. And then as far as ABV, anything that's 8.1 or higher is an 8-ounce pour.
You bump that up because it's kind of crowd control, really.
It is crowd control. We found after a few months, it used to be 8%, but there are so many beers that the ABV are exactly 8%. Mm-hmm. As sort of a cheery to our customers, we, you know, bumped it up by 8%.
That's sweet. That's nice. And just for those folks who don't know, ABV is alcohol by volume.
That's right. That's right. So...
Well, you definitely you know how to take care of your customers. That's one thing I heard. Once you started doing the $5, you know, beers, people started using that as a reference point, and you might be revolutionizing the whole industry.
You know, I drink in a lot of bars, and you know, you never really know what you're paying for. Sometimes, most places I know, like DBA and the Blind Tiger, the prices are listed. You know, they have great chalkboards behind the bar, but some places are kind of vague, and we wanted that uniformity. Is that a word, uniformity?
It is now.
Okay, great. So it makes things on the staff a lot easier because everything's the same price.
The thing I always notice about Dan is and watching him through his career since he came to New York, he always seemed like a man with a plan. Like he knew exactly where he wanted to work to learn as much as he could learn. And he actually, when I first met him, he was a kind of a flash bartender, cocktail guy. Working for Dale DeGroff at the short-lived Blackbird. And I went in there with my dad to check him out because I'd heard about him. And he didn't know I was checking him out. And, he, you know, he was doing all these crazy cocktails.
Was he doing the Tom Cruise thing, throwing the bottles around?
No, he got my dad and I so drunk, and then he sent us to Le Cirque where his girlfriend was the manager, and oh, my God.
Blood and Sand.
My dad's Blood and Sand. And it was one of his... Dale's famous cocktails, but he, you know, when he came and worked with us, he knew exactly what he wanted to learn and do, and he knew exactly where he was going the whole time. So, I was not surprised when he wound up opening up two of his own places.
Right, everybody.
Thanks.
All right, I got a couple of questions for you, Dan.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead, Jimmy.
You're an important guy. You're part of the Good Beer Seal now. You really deserve it, especially with the Pony Bar. What trends in beer would you like to see more of in 2011?
I guess really just the trickle-down effect of good beer. You know, when I moved here in 1998, you had to go to a DBA, you had to go to a Blind Tiger to seek out a really good beer, import, domestic, either way. But now I think almost every neighborhood in New York City has a restaurant or a bar that's just a neighborhood saloon or a neighborhood tavern that offers great, great quality stuff, great quality products. That wasn't the case when I moved here a long time ago, you know. And I'd to sort of see that continue.
You know what I like about you? To me, you represent this great tradition of publican. You learned it from the ground up. You worked in upstate, and you came to New York, and you're definitely a professional. You're not someone that just decided, I've got some money, I want to open a bar. Well, I feel like that if anyone knew how to run a bar, it would be you.
Well, I appreciate that because I don't have any money.
Well, hopefully you have some now.
I have a little bit, yeah. I have a little bit.
You're getting married.
I'm getting married. So there goes the money again. Just when I had some. I've been really lucky. I've always worked for hands-on operators. The guys, David Kadleski at Empire Brewing Company, Dave Broderick and Brian Delaney at the Blind Tiger and Spring Lounge, Danny McDonald at Puck Fair. I've always worked for hands-on operators, and I think that...
You just haven't worked for Ray yet. You got to work for Ray.
Right. I tried. I did apply. And I moved
That's
here.
Right, you did.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I met Dennis.
Ray wouldn't have him.
What was it like working for Empire Brewing?
Empire Brewing was great.
Because they're just starting to come into New York now, aren't they?
Yeah, they're coming into New York. They've got one product here. It's a cream ale. It's a nitro pour. It's sort of like a comparable to like a Boddington's. You want to try something that's difficult. Try selling craft beer in Syracuse in 1994. Because every transaction with every single customer was the same. It was, give me 6 bottles of this and one of your home brews. But the only beer we sold was what we made, and it was just trying to colonizing the moon. It was almost impossible.
But Clark's Ale House was up there, right? I mean,
it was, and
which now just closed.
It did just close, and I tried to buy some of their memorabilia.
Where's the Blue Tusk?
Blue Tusk is on Walton Street, right across the street from Empire Brewing.
That's been there for quite a while, too.
1995, yeah. Right. It opened about 7 months after Empire.
Right. Those guys used to come down to DBA all the time.
They did, and they did. Mike Yorton's a good guy, and he's really a pioneer. What Mike did at the Tusk was he started giving more American breweries a shot. Like at the time, 1995, it was Otter Creek and Anchor and Sierra Nevada, right. Magic Hat, more of the local stuff, Rogue. At Clark's Ale House, it was a lot of Guinness. It was a lot of Harp and Bass, which even in Syracuse was esoteric back then.
So they didn't have a lot of craft. Because I never went there, but I always heard it. But it was 25 beers and one sandwich.
And the sandwich is legendary. Legendary. I have a feeling he will rise up again. I have a feeling he will reopen at some point. So, yeah.
The Syracuse beer scene.
Yeah, there's some good stuff up there. There's certain brands, obviously, that dominate, mostly from Canada, but yeah.
Maybe we should do a live remote from Syracuse.
Why not? I would love to check out Empire Brewing.
We have to.
I mean, the thing about, I know they've come into New York and they're selling the cream ale. Mm-hmm. But what are the other beers that they make that you really like? If we go up there, what should we try?
They make a lot of seasonals. One of my favorite beers that they make, I think they do it year-round, is the Black Magic Stout. It's a nitro pour. It's about 5.5% ABV, I think. It has a chicory feel, mouthfeel to it. It's a little stronger than Guinness. It's not as soft as Guinness. They make a beer called White Afro, which is short for aphrodisiac. It's sort of like a Belgian pale ale.
Ray laughed at that one.
Like an unfiltered Belgian wheat pale hybrid. We've done a couple of events with them during New York City Craft Beer Week. Josh Schaffner's baby.
Hey, Dan.
Yeah.
So you're doing all American beers, right? All
correct,
domestic stuff.
Always.
So what are you using for the Irish style stout?
We use a couple different things. There's O'Reilly's from Sly Fox. Out
right,
in
right, right. That's Brian's. What a great
Brian's
brewer.
A great guy, great mm-hmm. brewer. We pour an awful lot of the 6-point Otis oatmeal stout, mm-hmm. which is a nitro, and then also the Victory Donnybrook, out of Pennsylvania.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I like that, too.
There's
good stuff.
Left Hand out of Colorado has a milk stout, mm-hmm. which is a nitro.
Those are their best. Their stouts are their best beers.
I think I agree.
You like Left Hand stouts? Yeah.
Yeah. That's what they're really good at.
So you rotate American, obviously.
Yeah, we do. We used to have two lines dedicated to nitro pours, and then after we opened, maybe 4 or 5 months, we realized there just wasn't really that many American
right.
nitro pours. So we took one off, and we've since, now that Empire's back in here, I'm sort of trying to keep a cream ale on nitro, which is like a left-hand sawtooth or something else, and then always a nitro stout as well. So we've gone back to having two nitros. And again, there's not a lot of them, and sometimes... Stuff may fall off a truck or something, then roll our way.
Fall off a truck? What does that mean, Dan?
Well, it just sometimes one-offs, rarities.
It kind of rolls down from Beer Mountain.
Yeah, yeah.
Beer Mountain, that elusive place. But yeah. Just, let's say this about Dan and the Pony Bar. They're supporting a lot of really great small American craft breweries. Let's take a short break here on Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be right back. On Heritage Radio Network, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio. We got a pretty cool show tonight. We're drinking, what's the beer that we're drinking? Who's going to tell us? Saison Roux. It's from the brewery, right?
Yeah.
That's a pretty great beer. Who brought that beer in tonight?
I did. Dan.
Thanks, Dan. Dan from
Thank
the Pony.
You, Dan.
Dan from the Pony Bar in Midtown. And we've got Sam Merritt, our special Beer Sessions Radio.
Fellas.
Beer sommelier.
Beer sommelier.
Sam, I am.
You guys had an interesting conversation going on about the professionalism of Dan's Pony Bar, in particular relation to like the lines and the service. Sam, tell us a little more about that and why you think that's so important. Because you've really been one of the leaders in terms of educating people.
Our theme with quality control is that you preserve the brewer's intent. You know, you turn around and you say, okay, the brewer made this beer. It left the brewery in a certain condition, and it's supposed to taste like that the whole time until it reaches your stomach. And, you know, beer is often abused on the way. And so it's the preservation of the brewer's intent. And so part of that is hygiene, and a huge part of it is hygiene and cleaning the glassware and cleaning the lines that it goes in. And so Dan put up a sign behind his bar. It's the first time I've seen it, and I think it's the first in the country that just tells the patrons when the last time he cleaned his draft lines. And it's on a dry erase laminated thing. It's a really simple thing, but I think it's an idea that hopefully will change the whole thing, the whole idea that you could get beer out of a dirty draft line. And so he's a pioneer in my book. He's like number one in the country in my book.
Yeah, the whole
really
draft
cool.
line, the whole draft line thing is very interesting. In New York State, the distributors are not allowed to touch the beer lines. They can't change them. They can't clean them. They can't do anything to them. We have a couple of bars down in New Orleans where the draft line is seen as like property. It's real estate owned by the distributor.
Sure, yeah.
And they clean their own lines, and they clean them every time they change a barrel. And there's bar owners in New Orleans, and there might be here in New York, too. I'm not one of them. None of us, I think, are.
That clean their own?
That don't clean their own, that allow the distributors
to
clean the beer lines, because they have this line, and this line is always going to have this particular beer on it, whether it's Bud, Cool, you know, or even good beer, you know, even like, you know, Liberty and stuff like that. The distributor is no person that actually handles that line because it's their real estate.
Yeah.
I went to a bar last night that doesn't clean its lines, clearly.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just, what a difference. I mean, I had a Goose IPA, and it was a completely different. It didn't even taste anything like it.
You're not going to tell us that bar, are you?
But it's close to the Tiger, unfortunately.
Sam, what are the signs? If you go into a bar, are there signs or bad taste that you can taste? If someone hasn't cleaned their lines?
You know, we'll look for a sign behind the bar that says, we cleaned our draft lines.
That's right.
But
right.
If you don't find that sign, what I tell people to immediately do is go to the bathroom and see how clean the bathroom is. And,
hey, now, hold on. Whoa.
Boy, raising
trouble.
The
bathroom's clean.
I'm never drinking a DBA.
And maybe the draft lines are clean.
But
the clear sign
for
is
taste, right?
Well, and yeah, and off taste, you look for all kinds of things. It can be anything from oxidation to just funkiness.
A lot of unfiltered beers.
Sour, green apple. Diacetyl is a big one. Sometimes it should be there, but most often not. So buttery flavors, vinegar, you know, cidery stuff going on.
Sounds like a Ringwood beer, actually.
Pugsley, if you're listening, thanks a lot.
Here's Jen Swartman.
Oh, hi, everybody.
Our regular favorite bartender.
Saying, I made a point on this subject a while back. I threw a party a few years ago and didn't mean to, but ended up throwing a party for a keg of Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. And I had all the beer geeks who were all in my tiny little apartment to drink this special beer that turned out to be Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. And I was devastated because the beer that was supposed to be there hadn't turned up. But everybody was, at first I thought they were just consoling me like, oh, it's okay, Jen. You know, Sierra Nevada Pale Ale is great. And I knew that it's a great beer. But what was really amazing were all the beer geeks who had been, you know, who are so picky were saying, you know what, Jen? This beer is really good. I forgot how good this beer was. And I instantly realized exactly why that was. And it was because when you're a beer geek and you really are looking for something new and different all the time and you go out in the market in New York City, when do you have Sierra Nevada Pale Ale? Normally, when that's the best beer that's offered to you on the draft list. And then you have, unfortunately, most of the beers in the city do not clean their tap lines often enough. And so you end up with an inferior product. So people had forgotten over time, all the beer geeks had forgotten how great and pretty that beer actually is when it's presented properly, because most of the representation that we have in New York is inferior, unfortunately, for the reason that Sam and Dan are talking about, everybody's talking about.
So, Jen, how often do you clean your beer lines at your apartment?
That line was really short. It was like a hand pump kegger, just like college. It was really clean. Fantastic.
So the hygiene is one side of it.
How often should you clean your lines?
Every 2 weeks.
Is that what you do at Pony?
Yeah. Pony we do every 2 weeks. You know, I think a lot of bars in New York do clean their lines and restaurants and whatnot, and not just good beer bars. But we've been doing it, and I didn't know how. People had always complimented us on it, and I didn't know how to let other people know. So my idea was that we would take the receipt. We use a company called Arctic Flow, and I thought my idea was that we would take the receipt, which had a date stamp on it, and then sort of put it in a frame and put it by the front door. So as people left, they would know the last day that our lines were cleaned, which is every other Friday morning. And then there was really no place to hang it by the door, and then we just got the idea to create this sort of like a thing based on the receipt, because the receipt was sort of illegible anyway.
And they're not reading too well when they leave your place.
exactly. And so we just had a space behind the bar to put it up, and so every other Friday morning after Arctic Flow leaves, and we pay them, and sometimes I tip them, we put it up. We change the date on it, and it's every other Friday.
You tip your guys?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
See, I hate when people start doing that kind of stuff. Now we all have to start tipping our goddamn line cleaning.
No,
company.
It's not every other. It's not. We don't do it. I don't. You know, twice a month. I probably.
Do you know what
Bob,
they do to your lines Bob if you Pickett? Don't tip them, Dave? Have you heard about what they do?
Is Bob Pickett spitting in my lines?
Oh, if it was only that.
Okay, let's elevate this conversation a little bit, because we're really heading down a path.
Well, let's talk about Publican as as community leader. We went from a guy who's you know, learned it from the ground up, and he's a professional, and he has a great bar. And now we've got another guy here, Dave Broderick, who I always call him chairman of the board. We have the Good Beer Seal. To me, he's the chairman of the board. And he's moved up to Vermont, and people are talking about him running for office. What's going on, Dave? Plus, you almost died.
Yeah, those two things.
Yeah, it was a near-death experience. I fell off a ladder and broke seven. I've never broken a bone. I broke seven right off the bat. But
seven. How many bones do we have to break?
I think 217.
217.
Yeah.
That was quite 13.
So it was a pretty high percentage. And but anyway, it's you know, about 85% back. And but yeah, there's our state rep for my town. Actually, two towns close to me. this guy Mark, and he came by, and he was driving by, and I could tell he stopped, and he saw me out there doing my farming thing, and he'd been watching me do this all summer, and he was like, you know, so we're really like psyched to see you putting down roots here and working your farm and all this. You know, what are your politics? And I said,
I like beer.
Yeah, exactly. I'm on the beer platform. I have no idea what my politics are. And he goes, okay. And he goes, have you ever thought about doing anything political? And I said, no. And he said, well, you know, my time is up in 2 years, and I'd like you to take over my spot if you're interested. And because nobody else wants to do it. And so I said, oh, you know, I'd like to talk with see if anybody else thinks I should, but yeah, I'd be interested. So
I know why, Dave. It's that Chuck Norris beard that you're growing.
That yeah,
you're That's totally true. Rocking the Chuck Norris.
You guys
thing.
Out there can't see this, but I have
Dave is wearing a navy blue suit right now and a red tie.
I have
a white shirt.
I have a Vermont beard now, and people love it up there.
They Vermont vest.
Like, yeah. So we'll see what happens, but yeah, no, I'm kind of excited about it. But I'm going to run on the small farm ticket.
It's state government you're talking about.
State, yeah. Vermont.
Oh, for now.
Just for now.
All right. I didn't know. Maybe federal.
I've got my eyes set on the governor's mansion.
So,
I just think
and Jen, we have
so
the
cool.
tradition from Colorado, right? Your friend, tell us about your friend who's the new governor of Colorado.
I was on one time, we were talking about how he was running for governor, and he won. John Hickenlooper will be the next governor. I guess he probably hasn't taken office yet. I think he probably just did. Maybe he did.
Yeah.
So congratulations, John.
And he is like one of the nicest guys.
Yeah. Everyone's like, it's so surprising. And I'm like, well, if you actually knew the guy, you would not be surprised at all. Because he's a force, and he's going to do a great job. So
well, it's a nice trend. For a long time, like, brewers were community leaders. You know, pub owners were community leaders. And we've got a nice group in this room, and I think that's what we try to do with the Good Beer Seal. We're trying to let people know that bar owners can be active in their communities. And
we're not evil.
Yes, right. And we're a fun place to hang out. But
we do make bad choices sometimes on New Year's Eve.
I mean, we can be evil. I didn't say it's well, not always.
So since we all made our new beer resolutions, Ray, tell us about your resolutions this year. Anything about beer or your...
Well, that's a good question, Jimmy. And I was thinking about it all day long. What would I look forward to in 20... Are we calling it 2011 or 2011? Have we decided yet?
2011.
2011
sounds good. 2011.
I would like to see the hipster... angst against good beer go away. I mean, it's like the whole PBR in a can thing. It's like, I don't know why they think that these huge corporations should get their money. They think they're being cool, but they're really not. I mean, it's like they should support good beer because it's in their best interest to support local brewers and people that make good things, as opposed to trying to, you know, be cool by drinking a can of Pabst Blue Ribbon. Not
hipster
to say,
ideals are as deep as a Target commercial, though. Who cares about them?
Well,
let them drink that crap.
You don't own a bar in Williamsburg, do you?
I don't own a bar in Williamsburg. Yes,
Ray,
actually.
Ray needs those guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
But let's do a sweep.
I'll come and we'll do a sweep after the cheese tasting tonight.
Cheese tasting tonight. If anybody out there has nothing to do tonight, we're having this incredible cheese tasting out at DBA Williamsburg.
What should I drink in 2011?
That's coming
2011.
Later.
What should I drink from Ray Dieter?
What should you drink? Well, you know, my favorite beers are, I love the Saison beers. I love the Beer de Garde, things from France, things from Belgium. In America, for Dan's. You know, I love a lot of, you know, nobody talks about Carol Stout that much anymore. Carol was like one of the founding mothers of the brewing of the breweries and craft brewing industry, and she makes great beer. I just had the Scarlet Lady on draft in Manhattan,
great, yeah.
And that was lovely. What a great beer that is.
All right. To Jen Schwartman, do you have any new beer resolutions for 2011?
Well, I don't know if I personally do, but I saw a trend that I'd like to support, and it's not necessarily a new trend for all of us since we've been paying attention to craft beer for a while, but I've realized how many people are now really making it part of their travels to seek out the great local beer in the region where they're traveling. Like, whether they're traveling for business or pleasure, they've now incorporated that in where they're going and doing research, and then they will find, they're out to find the best beer bars and the best local beer they can find. And it's been going on in small doses, but I've noticed a big wave of that. And, you know, there also are a lot of like great traveling programs where people are taking groups over to Europe and things, but it doesn't have to be like that. It can be just trying to drink local beer wherever you are. And I had a customer who actually emailed me the other day and was like, I'm going up to Toronto. Where should I go, Jen? And truth be told, I don't know Toronto. I couldn't tell him, but I said, go on Beer Advocate, find a website that where people are reviewing bars and breweries, and you come back and tell us, because we want to know when we do make it up to Toronto where we should go. So to kind of keep that moving, which is just goes along the lines of drinking locally wherever you happen to be.
Awesome. And Dan, what's your new beer resolution for 2011?
You know, I didn't really specifically have one, but I think maybe to continue, you know, to continue drinking, you know, local, supporting the local movement. You know, there's so many good breweries in New York City. We have Kelso, we have Chelsea, we have Six Point, we have Brooklyn, and a little further afield, you know, we have Captain Lawrence, and there's constantly new breweries coming online all the time. You know, further upstate. I guess really just to, as an operator, to continue to support the little guy and to give the little guy sort of a format or a place to, you know, show his stuff. You know, I guess that would be mine for.
That's a great one.
2011.
That's an awesome. Let's take another break here on Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be right back in a few minutes.
I'm in the phone booth.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Our sponsor is GreatBrewers.com, your online resource for all things craft beer. And all partied out, you're not alone. Partied out or not, a good beer and good company always hit the spot. If you're looking for just the right atmosphere for your next pint, check out the new bar profile section on GoodBeerSeal.com, our other supporter and sponsor. Well, we've got some really cool guests tonight. We got Ray Dieter, we got Jen Swartman, we got our beer sommelier, Sam Merritt. We got Dan from the Pony Bar and Dave Broderick, back from Vietnam.
Back from Vietnam.
You might as well.
Okay. That Chuck Norris
thing. We miss this guy. He got hurt, and he's a farmer.
Yeah. Wow.
A small farmer. We're talking about beers, and I'm just happy to be back from my New Year's Eve party.
Hey, Jimmy, I just got to. What is this beer?
Off the air.
Sam, what are we drinking, man?
Good question.
Just poured it for me.
It's La Bleue, sour blueberry ale. Where's it from, Dan?
It's Ithaca Brewing Company. It's part of their Excelsior series.
Oh, it's Empire.
I've had
Ithaca.
Ithaca. I've seen it on draft at the GABF, but aside from that, I think it's a bottle-only product.
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
And you had to fight for it.
I did have to fight for it, yeah.
Thanks for bringing it.
Yeah. Vietnam or Vermont, they all begin with the V. But well,
and they're so similar.
Where the hell did that come from, Jim?
Well, we love Dave Broderick. He was a small
I feel like
farmer.
I was shot, actually.
He's been in the rice paddies out in Vermont.
I do have a rice paddy, actually. So, maybe that's what he was thinking. I don't know.
It's all about the Chuck Norris beard. I really think that's what it is.
Didn't it, you know? Tommy Ortega told us
about that. I'm loving this whole Chuck Norris
paddy
thing.
So talking about trends, all these young guys have been working for Six Point in Brooklyn are going to even like smaller breweries. Craig Freimark, who's been one of the top brewers over at Six Point, is going out to Barrier, which is a nano brewery in
Queens,
Oceanport, Long Island. Yeah. Is it Oceanside, Long Island? And our friend
Dan Suarez.
Dan Suarez is going up to your buddy, what, Hillstead? What's it called?
Hill Farmstead.
Hill Farmstead.
Yeah, working with Sean Hill, and actually that's the trend that I'm hoping to see more of is more of these, you know, these small farmhouse. I mean, true farmhouse, like connected to the land, to the place where they, you know, live and really get that, you know, feeling of terroir, you know, that you get with wine. I'm really hoping we see more of that in beer, where they are growing their own hops and on the premises where they actually brew and just bring that, you know, connect that whole thing. Obviously, Sarah is doing it on a big scale, but I'd like to see it on a small scale, too. I think it's just absolutely fascinating. And it's like the whole vinification of the beer industry, just bringing it, you know, more along those lines.
How was your hop crop this year, Dave?
It came out pretty good, but unfortunately, I used it myself, which was a big mistake. Jen got to taste it and poured it down the drain.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, no, that's okay. I'm going to pour yours down the drain. We got some of her beer here tonight.
I gave him free rein to pour it down the drain.
I made a huge mistake of, I didn't know what I was doing, so I just pitched it, you know, put the hops to dry hop it with these wet hops that I had grown, and I just left it in there for like 2 weeks.
Dave, what does wet hops mean? What does that mean?
Wet hops means right off the vine. So I just got a whole bunch of them and just shoved them into the carboy after it had already fermented, and I'd re-racked it, and so in effect, you know, wet hopping it, and it just came. It's like so vegetal. I mean, it was just you just do it for a pretty short period of time. Apparently, I'm learning.
We're learning. Yeah, my. I'd love for you guys to try this thing.
Let's crack it open.
Okay. Yeah, let's crack it open.
Because it's not perfect, I'm telling you right now. But I'm actually
sounds
pretty
perfect.
Proud.
Sounds good.
I'm pretty proud of a few things, and I understand exactly what I did wrong. I overboiled my pallet hops. And for anybody who doesn't understand how this works, to create an entire hop profile, you pitch your hops at different points through that boil. And the ones you boil the longest give you the palate on they give you the tongue palate, real hoppy.
This is very North Pacific.
And no, it's very gin. So anyway, my brewing buddy and I, who knew less than I did, decided we were going to do a full grain mash right out of the gate. So we did that. We were drilling holes on Thanksgiving Day in the bottom of a lauter tun, and I call this thank you beer because we brewed it on Thanksgiving night. But I was under the misguided notion that it was only going to take me an hour to boil down 6.5 gallons of wort down to 5. And instead, it took like an hour and a half. So what it meant was I started pitching, and I overboiled a bunch of aroma hops. So it was way more palate and less aroma. So there's nothing like wrong with it exactly, but it's not what I intended, and at least I know what I did wrong.
Sam, what do you think of this beer? Sam Merritt, Civilization.
I think it's great. You know, I think people maybe, you know, if there's a mistake that a lot of home brewers will hang their hat on as an excuse to just not be proud of their beer, it's that it doesn't smell exactly like it tastes, or vice versa. And so, you know, the aroma hops are in a different place. Maybe the bittering hops didn't go into the brew exactly when you wanted it. But, you know, if you're going back to, like, Dave's idea of being a small brewery and having beer, usually you just drink what you make. And, like, you just have to be so proud of yourself that you can drink it.
Well, and it's funny because Sasha,
my cohort in this, he is
a super mechanical guy. He's like real hands-on in everything he does, and he's a great person to team up with. And he keeps, every time we have this beer around, he's like, stop saying that. I'm like, it's my nature to lay the disclaimer because I know it's not perfect, but I'm proud of it for being a first run. And I killed the first pitch of yeast. Whoa. I pitched it too cold. 3 days later, I was like, oh my gosh, nothing's happening. I went over, broke into my friend's house with the keys I had from cat sitting, and opened it to see that nothing was going on. Went over to Whole Foods because they have home brewing supplies, got another vial of yeast. We had to warm the wort, re-aerate it, re-pitch. So this is about 7.5%.
You should
and
just
I'm
let
just
the
proud
cat,
that we,
you know, die and worry about the yeast.
It's problematic, but I think that the recipe is going to be great once it's done right, and I don't think I did anything too wrong.
Jen, you know what? This is a really great segue to a story that I've been waiting for you to tell us for months. And it's something about Blue Moon or something.
Yeah. I'm telling this story out of nowhere. It's not exactly on subject. But it's funny because Blue Moon Brewery is huge right now, as most of us know. And people come in and they're really getting into wheat beers and they ask for Blue Moon by name. And a lot of people are under the... another misguided notion that it's like a small brewery. And I actually was working at a bar at Finelli's, and I had one of the major reps of the main distributor of all Coors products and a lot of microbrews telling a young guy who was under his wing, this like saying, oh yeah, Blue Moon is a small brewery that Coors purchased. And you know, and now, you know, so they're kind of keeping it going. And I stepped in. I was like, I'm so sorry, but I have got to correct you. Do you mind? And he's like, sure. So Coors is going to hate me, and hopefully my friends at Sandlot won't hate me. But the truth of that beer and where that beer came from is kind of interesting. Back when I was in Denver in the mid-90s, they built Coors Field, and it's right on the edge of lower downtown Denver, beautiful baseball stadium if you ever have a chance to go. And because Coors was behind it, they put in a brew pub on the premise. It's only opened for at-home game days. And they knew they were going to have some great beer on tap. So they went around, and of course they've got this huge budget, so they put in a playland. And then they go around the state of Colorado, and they handpicked a bunch of talented brewers and gave them an offer that they really just could not refuse. I mean, and brewers don't make a lot of money. And so they gave them this offer, and they said, here's the deal. You got to do this, you know, a little range selection of beers to be served at the Sandlot Brewery in the stadium only on game days. And the rest of your time, just play. So these guys have been there since the beginning. I mean, they're just not going anywhere. They have the best job in the world. And we used to go, my ex-boyfriend who was in the beer world and I used to go, and we had a friend there. So we'd knock on the glass of the brewery during the game. We'd get a cheap ticket, knock on the glass. He'd let us in, give us some cups, just set us free in front of this dry erase board with all these crazy beers they were brewing in the, you know, mid to late 90s. And they were doing like triple box and 11% imperial stouts and all these crazy things that you really were not seeing a lot of back then.
At the ballpark,
but down, not to the public. Oh. This is all like because we knew someone. So we were drinking some of the most insane beer, and we said some of the best beer in this state is not even sold to the public. But what it was a think tank, and it was a place for them to develop brands. And the truth is that Blue Moon was actually the most successful manifestation of that project, where Coors saw they were brewing a decent wit and were like, huh, something could be done with that. And then, of course, they might have slightly dumbed it down. They mass produced it, so they took the quality and maybe, like, you know, stretched some grains and things. But they created that. They spun that out. And Coors has a history of this where they, you know, with Killian's Red, a lot of people maybe still don't know that Killian's Red was part of Coors, because they cleverly don't really put it on the label that it's part of Coors, and they try to create sort of a craft beer entity that's really developed out of their, you know, think tanks. So people who think that it was a small brewery that then was bought up by a big brewery are not really, like, knowing the truth. And Coors, of course, wants them to believe that. So it's up to me, I guess.
To evil, like, empire.
Well, and now it's funny because you go to Sandlot.
Evil enough to start
a
brand.
You go to Coors Field, you go to Sandlot, yeah. And it says, now big signs. I went back between one year and another. I went, what happened? Now it says Blue Moon Brewery at the Sandlot. So they've totally, like, flipped it because they needed an entity.
So what happened to the guys? Are they still down there making their experiments?
Oh, yeah. They're having a blast.
So it's like a Willy Wonka thing.
It's fantastic. They have won more Great American Beer Festival medals than anybody else in the country.
So
and they really? What's funny is the beers that win are not beers that are sold to the public, so they can name them whatever they want. So, so what has happened? This is what they did.
No, you tell me. They went and bought up all the good talent in the state, and they keep them locked in the ball field.
No, like the Yankees. No, they treat them, and they feed them really well. I guess.
And then no one else gets to try their beers.
What's funny is there will be, and this has been so funny for all the brewers, you go to the awards ceremony at GABF, and they'll be like, and the gold medal goes to, and I can't remember what the style of beer was, but...
oh, he went to the bathroom.
No. The name of the beer will be Most Beer Judges Are Boneheads, and it gets gold, you know, because, of course, the judges don't know the names of the beers. And so then everybody just, like, cracks up. And then, like, a couple years later, a beer will win. It'll be like, the name of the beer is Yep, Still Boneheads. So they just, like, play around. I mean, they're really kind of, in a way, they're making fun, but they're great brewers.
I just want to... kind of figure this out. So the brewery, the laboratory is actually at Coors Stadium in Denver?
It's a functioning brewery in the ballpark. And, you know, it doesn't take much to brew enough beer of some
like
set varieties
pub, right? Yeah.
For in a brew pub fashion to only service this pub when it's only opened for X number of game days a year. So these guys are full. I mean, they're full-time brewers. So they've got some more time on their hands. And it's not like they're brewing beer and aging it for any purpose. You know, they're just, they have this one responsibility so they can be creative the rest of the time.
Okay, so 81 days of baseball games minus 365. I'm not going to do the math because I'm not good at it. But we can, it's 200 and something,
sure.
I guess. Is that beer available? Can you go to the pub and drink it? Or is it just, it's completely...
No.
It's not
That's
available.
What I'm saying. They're buying up all the talent. They're not letting...
Exactly.
This way they're
keeping them locked up.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, they're velvet handcuffs, you know? That's the... And that's what's great is that they're brewing really decent beers, and these guys are perpetuating great beer brewing, but under Coors is... Yeah.
Nobody likes the big brewers around here.
But the true moral of that story is that Jen is now single. Okay.
Oh. So. Because she was dating one of the Coors guys, I guess. Were you dating a Coors guy?
It was funny. I met up with it. He and his wife met with me at the GABF a couple years ago, and we relived the whole thing. We knocked on the glass. It was just fantastic. So
that might be another show or another radio program.
You know, we have to do a show on Jen's love life. Anyway.
It's interesting.
It's beer. We're all friends.
Okay, guys, we have an email question here. One last minute. We do. And it's from Eric P. in Astoria. Eric, thank you for emailing us. And this one's geared towards our beer sommelier, Sam Merritt. I tune in each week and hear all kinds of advice about beer pairings, but I'm wondering, can a good beer make a truly bad pairing? This is a good final question.
That is a good one. Because, you know, it's all about experience, and you have this pretense of what you're going to taste before you taste it every time because you look at what you're tasting. People tell you what you're supposed to experience. So it's really hard to turn and to tell people that, oh, you better not do that because they might discover something amazing. So, no, try everything. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise until you try it yourself. You know, people putting chocolate sauce on lamb, you know, and drinking, you know, let's see if I Hefeweizen with it might be a disgusting thing, but that's just me, you know. And so absolutely not. Try everything. Try everything. If you're paying a bunch of money, though.
Everybody's palate is different. I mean, it's just, you're never going to get the same taste as someone else.
The first person who dipped a French fry in a chocolate milkshake was a genius, you know. Was a genius. And so, you know, that was something that hopefully wasn't sold on anyone or no one told them what to do. So, yeah, try everything. You're not going to make any mistakes until people tell you.
Wait. Let's back up. The first person that dropped a French fry into a chocolate milkshake is a genius.
Sure. Have you had it? Have you tried it?
I can't say I have.
But what's the beer pairing?
Oh, the beer pairing.
Yeah,
sometimes that's breakfast, you know. Beer pairing for that, there is none.
See, maybe that's the bad beer pairing.
Yeah.
Well, there are
bad beer pairing is one with no beer. Yeah.
There really are no rules for what you try, and I agree with Sam that it's worth trying things just to build your palate and your repertoire and start to understand. However, there really are some bad pairings where, you know, everything that you've always loved about a certain beer, when you eat it with a certain cheese or you taste it with a certain food, all of those things are negated and it becomes sour and strange in your mouth. So what you need to do is pay attention to what you're learning, and maybe you can start to develop something where you start to understand that maybe, you know, those hops might not work with that astringency, or something does not quite piece together, and you can start to build this great repertoire of what does work and what can enhance. Because what you really want to do when you pair is you want to enhance components of the food and enhance components of the beer, and not let one stomp out the other one.
And hopefully create that third thing, you know,
course,
which is
that magical thing where you can't put your finger on it.
The ultimate goal.
Yeah.
I was really adamantly against having ice cream in beer pairings. And then suddenly this year, everyone was doing it. So, you know, not too long ago, I thought that was a bad thing.
That's not a new event.
But I don't know if I like it still.
Guys used to come in.
You have to be in tune with the froth of an egg cream and drinks like that, where you're making some sort of between frozen and liquid sludge and strange things like that, which is kind of...
One of the great ice cream and beer things is black chocolate stout with a scoop of vanilla ice cream.
Yeah, it's just amazing. Changes it, and it's that third thing. It's that it's things changing each other and then turning into something else.
Dan from the Pony Bar. Dan, what's your last name?
McLaughlin.
Okay,
or McLaughlin.
You're Dan Pony Bar to me.
Sarah McLaughlin's dad.
Different spelling.
All right. Anything you want to tell us about good or bad beer and food pairings before we close out?
Yeah, I don't like them. I mean, I don't like doing them. I like partaking in them. I enjoy, you know, I love, you know, beer and cheese pairings and beer and nut pairings. But at my place, we don't do any pairings.
Beer and nut pairings?
Nuts, you know, I'm a big fan of like cocktail nuts and cashews and...
I love nuts. I'm nuts too.
Yeah, you know, cocktail peanuts, dry roasted peanuts, Planters.
Pistachios.
That's it. You know, nuts are natural with beer. Ray's got the joy of cheese tonight over at DBA. I'd like to thank our sponsors at GreatBrewers.com, who have helped to bring you this podcast tonight. And don't forget, check out our parent is Heritage Radio Network. Go check out heritageradionetwork.com. There's a lot of really great shows. There's a chance to donate and support our network. And also check out thegoodbeerseal.com. You'll find Beer Sessions Radio on Facebook. Thanks to Ray, Dave, Sam, Jen, and Dan for joining me here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Bree O'Connor. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point.